WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Virginia moves closer to banning cell phones in public schools. We're no longer the worst state in the country for mail delivery, but we're still pretty bad. And Jeff Shapiro surveys the week in Virginia politics and state government. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, August 16th. Virginia is moving closer to restricting cell phone use in schools. The Virginia Department of Education published a draft of its cell phone-free guidelines on Thursday after a series of public input events. The Virginia Mercury reports the draft defines cell phone-free education as bell-to-bell, meaning phones should be turned off and stored away from the first school bell until dismissal. That would include lunchtime and breaks between class periods. Virginia is no longer the worst state in the country for mail delivery, but it's still pretty bad. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports that Virginia is now only the fourth worst in the nation. That's according to data from a watchdog agency that monitors the U.S. Postal Service. The numbers suggest that mail service is rebounding, even while other postal regions across the U.S. experience their own performance declines. In the first few months of 2024, the Postal Service in Virginia had a 66% on-time delivery rate for first-class mail, indicating the percentage of mail delivered within a two-day window. In the spring, that score had improved to 77%. Virginia's job growth is strong, according to the latest data from the federal government, but that growth varies from place to place. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Charlottesville, Blacksburg, and Harrisonburg are seeing some of the largest job growth numbers across Virginia. More than 3% growth this summer compared to last summer. John Provo is executive director for the Center for Economic and Community Engagement at Virginia Tech.
A common thread for these areas is a strong, what we sometimes call an eds and meds economy. So a great presence of higher education and healthcare assets that give them a base for growth that's happening in other areas like bio in Charlottesville or manufacturing in Blacksburg and Roanoke.
Meanwhile, Northern Virginia is flatlining with a job growth of less than 1% over the last year.
We don't have enough workers.
That's Terry Clower, professor of public policy at the Schar School at George Mason University.
The unemployment rate continues to be roughly about 2% here regionally. And so we're seeing constraints on growth that just largely is a reflection of this ongoing trend of domestic outmigration that we've seen in Northern Virginia and more broadly the greater Washington region.
Northern Virginia is not the only part of the Commonwealth that's flatlining in terms of job growth. On the other side of the state, Bristol is also posting job numbers that are not growing as fast as other parts of the Commonwealth. I'm Michael Pope.
One in five people released from state prison are likely to be back behind bars within 3 years. Governor Glenn Youngkin is asking state agencies to do more to ensure that former prisoners have what they need to succeed. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Sandy Hausman reports.
Every year, about 10,000 people are released from prisons and jails in Virginia. Governor Glenn Youngkin says they can make a positive contribution to society, make families whole again, and reduce the burden on police if they have the basics.
A job, secure housing, health care, and mental health and substance abuse treatment.
So he called on state agencies, nonprofits, and the public sector to help ensure people get those things. Specifically, he urged Virginia's community colleges to offer programs for people behind bars and suggested prisons offer online education. He also urged the Department of Motor Vehicles to streamline issuing of identification, a proposal applauded by Chuck Mayer, with the justice reform group, Julian.
You can't get a job, you can't get health insurance without ID, you can't get housing without ID. And one of the more common problems that we've seen with people returning from incarceration is that they don't have valid ID.
He noted agencies being asked to step up are already busy and expressed hope that the legislature would appropriate some money for what Youngkin called the Stand Tall, Stay Strong, Succeed Together Reentry Initiative. The governor also requested help from the Almighty and volunteers.
We have online the volunteer application at the Department of Corrections website. go and volunteer.
His order called for hiring a coordinator and setting up a task force to implement this initiative. I'm Sandy Houseman.
White Christian activists gathered in Chesterfield this week to push the school board to approve Governor Glenn Youngkin's transgender student policies. So far, it's one of a number of school districts that have refused to pass the policies that transgender students and their parents say violates their rights. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner has more.
Chesterfield County schools are currently in violation of the law.
That's Josh Hetzler, legal counsel with the conservative Founding Freedoms Law Center. He and other Christian activists want Chesterfield County School Board to pass Governor Youngkin's transgender policy. Hetzler and his colleagues at the Family Foundation have been pressing and threatening legal action against school boards for failing to pass Youngkin's policy. They say rules that forbid trans students from using the restroom, playing sports, or using pronouns aligned with their gender identity protects their religious freedom.
We know that it's infringing upon people's speech, compelling them to use certain pronouns.
Chesterfield School Board passed former Governor Ralph Northam's inclusive trans policy back in 2021, but so far they have not voted on Youngkin's. Local teacher and parent Caitlin Weston has a 10-year-old trans daughter in the school system. She thanked the board for their support after pointing to the increased risk of suicide among LGBTQ youth who face discrimination.
It is very simple. Continuing to support your students in the way you have been will continue to save lives.
Chesterfield isn't alone in defying the governor. Richmond City explicitly rejected the policies in 2022, and Fairfax County similarly refused to pass the measure, though it's currently facing litigation for refusing to do so. Requests sent to the Department of Education for a total number of school districts that have adopted the policy were not returned. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
And finally today, the candidates for one of Virginia's U.S. Senate seats will meet face-to-face. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and Michael Pope recap the week in politics and state government.
All right, a lot of news to get to this week, starting with the race for United States Senate. Incumbent Democrat Tim Kaine and Republican challenger Hung Cao will be doing at least one debate. And Jeff Shapiro, is there a possibility we might get more than one debate out of these Senate candidates?
Michael, I think we're lucky that we even have one at this point. Recall that Cao and Kaine had been invited to debate before the Virginia Bar Association in July. This is a traditional stop in statewide campaigns. Kaine had accepted that invitation. Cao never seemed to acknowledge it, much less accept it or reject it. We're waiting to hear from Cao on a third debate, and this was before the Northern Virginia Chamber of Commerce, another storied stop on the campaign trail. Kaine has indicated that he will debate Cao there, assuming Cao bothers to show up. The point here is that Cao is clearly trying to control his exposure, and this is a guy, though, who could probably use a little exposure, given that he is trailing in the polls.
And in Richmond, the city government has seen a lot of very negative headlines recently about mismanagement and lack of transparency. The mayor of Richmond, LeVar Stoney, is pushing back on all that, right?
Yeah, the mayor very much on offense. This seems to be an indication that the problems facing City Hall are problematic for his lieutenant governor ambitions. All sorts of problems from government-issued credit cards, difficulties in administering this restaurant tax, delays in resolving disputes over real estate taxes. Stoney is one of four candidates for the Democratic nomination next year. And let's put it this way, his stewardship is certain to be an issue in the Democratic primary. And if he is nominated in that four-way race, for sure the Republicans will be using it in the general election.
And then speaking of bad headlines, the Department of Education has certainly received some recently. One that has to do with compromised personal information of people who receive state aid. And the other is the anticipated release, delayed release, it sounds like, of standardized test results. Jeff Shapiro, what's happening at the Department of Education?
Anna Bryson, my colleague at the Times-Dispatch, has reported on both of these issues. Regarding these test scores, the administration had indicated it would release them in September. Now they're balking at that idea. It would seem that the administration is concerned that these tests will continue to show, shall we say, COVID-related learning loss. Governor had vowed to take care of that problem. Also on this compromised information, that had to do with the distribution of state cash to parents to purchase tutoring, textbooks, academic supplies, the sorts of things that kids needed to make up for this COVID-related learning loss. Two embarrassments the administration had not anticipated, because the governor, of course, had vowed to clean up these COVID-related problems.
So those are embarrassing headlines, but the governor is probably pretty pleased with the headlines that talk about the budget surplus, right?
Oh, yes. Now, the governor, in full caretaker mode, remember, he's heading into his last full year in office, formally announced that $1.2 billion surplus. He's taking credit for all of this. He's also talking up these fattened emergency funds. If you're of the impression that this is new, it is not. Virginia has been setting aside big buckets of cash pretty much since the early 90s when Doug Wilder was governor. By the way, this is something to which Democrats and Republicans are committed.
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Take care.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.